I think it's funny because my preview has like this eclectic mix. It has like half, has like a third half trailers, and then a little bit of those videos that we're talking about, like the Easter egg movie videos. It's like a, you know, 10% of that, and then it has like 40% of like how to fix your car, or how to fix your ice maker. Like it has all these like the 5-minute videos that I'm trying to fix my ice maker.
You know, top 10 kills of Sharknado.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Hola, Ted. ¿Cómo estás?
Aquí. No, bien. Which one do I say?
Aquí. So you're good? Is that what you're saying?
I'm good.
All right. It's episode 78, and we're recording this on June 14th. So let's wish the U.S. Army a 244th birthday.
Oh, wow. Lots of numbers.
Yeah. Pretty old. Pretty old. But going strong. So what's your beer tonight?
So tonight, I went to Handy Market after work today.
Handy Market.
And Handy Market, oh, good old Handy Market in Burbank. And I became like the beer ambassador. There was a young lady, Natalie, that was buying some beer. And she kind of had the look that I had on my face where she didn't know what she wanted. And she was looking all around. And I think it wasn't her first time there, but it was first time like really digging into the beer selection. So she went with a sour tonight, which isn't my cup of tea, but she's over the IPAs too. And I was like, oh God, everybody's over the IPAs. But I went with a whole thing. It's called Shaken Not Stirred. It's got a pretty label. Can you see it?
So everybody's over the IPAs?
Everybody except for me and you, maybe.
I don't believe it. Yeah, I see it.
Shaken
looks cool.
Not Stirred, right?
Yeah,
so I like it. It's called Whiskey Sour Inspired Nitro Ale Brewed with Cherry, Orange Peel, Lemon, Lactose, and Oak. I don't know this lactose thing. They always say that.
Wait, it's on nitro?
It's on nitro.
Okay, you want to pour that pretty hard.
So listen to the thing. It says 6% okay. ABV, contains lactose. I think that's the nitro, right?
No, nitro is nitrogen.
Well, okay, so lactose, it's in there somewhere. So gently shake the can to activate the nitrogen. Open, then invert can over glass and pour hard.
Yeah, just like you said. You got to like throw it in the glass.
Is it even all going to fit in the Stella Artois?
Dude, do you have a bigger one? Do you have a bigger one just in case?
Do I have a bigger one? I think I have a bigger one. I'll go get the bigger one.
Okay, I'll wait. Oh, get the Carmelite. Get the Carmelite.
Oh, do you think the Carmelite's bigger?
Yeah, get that one. Yeah, the Carmelite, the design of it will handle the head better.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so go ahead and throw it in there.
All right. Shake it gently. I don't know what that means, though.
I would just open it and just like dump.
Okay. All right.
Get across the room and throw like a fastball. So while you're doing that, oh man, that was a nice crack there. Yeah, get it. Yeah, look at, there you go.
Wow.
Oh, that looks wonderful.
That is an activated beer.
So one thing I noticed between both of our beers,
mm-hmm.
Silver can with sticky label on it.
It's a fad. It's it. It's the new thing.
Yeah. So what I have tonight is McKellar Brewing San Diego. I don't know if you ever heard of McKellar, but I got this one because of the label. You know, enough said. I read the book by its cover.
Sweet.
I enjoyed it because there's like a guy talking. Another dude with the microphone over here.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's like perfect for our show. I'll definitely take some photos of this one. But it's an IPA.
That one's going to take multiple photos.
Because it wraps the whole can. You're right. It's an IPA and another IPA, as we were just talking. 8% alcohol. 8%.
Mm-hmm.
So. Oh, yeah. Oh, foaming. All right. So I'm not going to pour mine nearly as hard because it's a standard kind of a deal. Oh, and by the way, it's also a pint, too. It's not a 12. It's a 16. Is that and yours is a 16 as well, right?
Mine's a 16 as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what's it? 437 mLs. One pint.
Yeah, that's what this is. Same thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's like the thing. 16s in a can, that's silver, no paint. You know, like everybody's doing the same stuff these days, you know? It's like...
But it's all... They're putting their effort into the design of the sticker.
And the other thing I'm glad the... it kind of came and went, but you notice how like you're not seeing the hazy stuff as much anymore?
The hazy is more limited, yes.
It's still there, of course, but like it's kind of fallen by the wayside just a little
bit. It's gone from 50% of the IPAs to now about 20 to 15% of the IPAs.
Yeah. How does yours taste?
Mine is definitely a sour. It's a whiskey sour. So back when I was just in college, I was drinking a lot of whiskey sours. So
oh, okay.
That's kind of, it's weird to have a beer that's like a mixed drink.
That would be weird. Well, this is a double IPA, New England style, so it's...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's good, but man, it's bitter. Woo, and it doesn't say the IBUs, unfortunately.
Hmm.
I'd like to know, but it's a bitter one, man. But no, it's tasty, though. It's tasty for sure.
And 9% for the double IPA.
No, 8%.
Like, 8%. Oh, 8% is low.
I would say it's probably, like, if you think about a bell curve, it's probably on the lower end of the bell curve for a double, for sure.
For the double, yeah.
All right. So big week this week, huh? Yeah, no, maybe?
Yeah. Why? I forgot.
You always come at me with these like a million events you guys do every week.
Well, we had 3 events this evening. That's why I was a little late. So thank you for accommodating. Tonight.
3 events. Oh my goodness. Do tell.
I was held late at work over some work stuff.
Oh, that's not an event though. That's just you stayed late at work.
And then we had what is it called, Dan? Bryce has a book club at the library, and they had all these different animals that went over 45 minutes than normal.
Is that like Zoo to You?
Similar to that, yeah.
Yeah, because the boys went to that yesterday. Zoo
to cool.
You. Yeah, at our library.
So the library events are hopping. And then after that, we went over to our friend's house, and they had a bunch of Polish beers and Polish food, and
oh, yummy.
We stopped in for that, and we had some piwo and good times, and then we were like, oh, we have to go. But, you know, we have to say, you know, last week we said we had a guest, but, you know, things happen, life happens, so we're hoping that Joe will join us next week.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, you know, it's like, we don't want to turn this into a job and, like, start forcing people on the show. Like, come on, you committed. Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, this week, yesterday, matter of fact, was Clarissa's birthday. So, yeah
I know.
Happy birthday to her.
That's awesome. What'd you guys do?
Oh, I made beef fajitas, corn tortillas, you know, and the fajitas were pretty awesome. Boys wanted no part of it, so they had pasta leftovers. You know, but that's okay, more for us.
To each his own.
Yeah, a little bit salty, I guess, you know, maybe slightly on the salty side, but I mean, overall, they were really good. And that was really it, more or less a slow week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you want to get into what we're watching, or?
Oh, you know what else we did this week? So
ooh.
Bryce has had his communion gifts, his communion money burning a hole in his pocket.
Okay.
So this week he's decided that he wanted to go all out at Big Five.
Whoa.
So we went to Big Five with his big winnings from communion, first communion, and he bought himself a basketball hoop and basketball, a baseball bat, a bunch of baseballs, and some wiffle, like professional wiffle balls.
So oh, wow.
Hit the they're called skills. So it's like a high end wiffle ball that he can hit around, and so and a mitt, a couple mitts, so he can throw the ball around. And he went all out on sports. So that's what we'll be doing this summer.
That's cool. Yeah, exciting times for a boy who's, you know, a young lad around, what is he, 10?
Yes. Yeah. Turns 10 next month.
Oh, next month. Perfect. Hey, let's get into what we're watching. And then since we're kind of talking about our week, I mean, our week is a little bit what we're watching as well. And then
of course,
can jump into the movies.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So go for it. What have you been watching here?
So I finally have gotten back into Riverdale, watching a little bit of Riverdale.
Oh, Riverdale. Yeah.
It's, you know, it was great the first couple seasons, and now a new season is on Netflix. So I was watching it a little bit here and there. I will say, I don't know what season it is, 3 or 4, but it's on that crest of when I'm like, I'm into it, I'm interested, but it's almost, you know, run its course. There's only so many new things you can do with this town and this group of people. So I'm like,
sure.
I don't want to say I'm spoiling on it, but you know, been there, done that. I'll let it play in the background for some stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not as engaged as I was in the first few seasons.
Yeah. Any particular reason why, or?
I don't know. I think, you know, this season, they're doing like gargoyles and it's like a Dungeons and Dragons ripoff.
Oh, I gotcha.
So it's like they're all playing this game and bringing it into real life. So I don't know whether that's part of what's going on with what's turning me off to it. But yeah, so that's that. And then I was happy to find that Documentaries Now just came back this year. It's had a couple year hiatus. And I don't know, you and I love documentaries, but
are they all different documentaries for each? Like, is each episode is like a season or something, or what is it?
So they do seasons. So it's basically Seth Meyers and a bunch of people from Saturday Night Live, the writers. They got together and they do spoofs. They do mockumentaries.
Okay.
But they base it on some of the famous documentaries.
Oh, so these are documentaries that are like a rockumentary.
They're mockumentaries.
No, I know.
They're fake.
Wait, so what you're saying is Spinal Tap is real because it's not a mockumentary, it's a rockumentary.
Right, right.
Okay.
Spinal Tap is real.
What are the, or how many documentaries are there? Like in the season, like 10 or something or 8? What's the season run? I'll ask another one too.
Yeah.
Like, what, so there's a true like a real documentary. And then this show that, what is it called? What is it?
It's called Documentaries Now.
Documentaries Now.
And it's really cool. It has, the open is done by Helen Mirren, and she comes out deadpan in like this studio, blank studio space. And she always says like, welcome to season 57 of Documentaries Now. She always like has this huge obscure number, this documentary series has been going on for, you know, 50 years. And then now the thing that they started doing, I think they did it a little bit before, but now they're doing it where they show you exactly what the subject is parodying. So like the opening of season 3 parodies Wild Wild Country, which you said you had heard of.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. I want to though.
Yeah. So I lost myself down the rabbit hole. I was, like I said, I was watching a little bit of Riverdale in the background while I'm working. And then I saw that this, it's called Batshit Valley is the name of this documentary. And I saw that it came back, and I guess it came back in February, and I didn't know that it was back, you know, but it was new on Netflix. So I started watching it, and I kind of got really drawn into this because it's just done so well. And they pick like the best documentaries to parody. And then they just go straight deadpan into this space. And to see actors acting serious while they're talking about ridiculous things, you know, it was done so well that after watching it, I was like, oh, well, let's see where this Wild Wild Country is. Oh, it's on Netflix too. I could just roll straight into it.
Yeah.
And I rolled straight into that.
That's about the guy who starts the cult in Oregon or something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I won't give too much away about Batshit Valley, but Owen Wilson plays the cult leader in this one. And Michael Keaton plays like the head FBI agent that they're interviewing after the fact. So it's just hilarious stuff. And, you know, they just,
yeah,
everybody's so serious in the documentary, and it's just the most ridiculous stuff. So the minute you watch, if you had seen the original documentary, then you could say like, oh, I could see where they're riffing here.
Sure.
But having not seen it, I'm like, oh, now I got to go find it.
You're going backwards.
So I'm doing it backwards. But then I'm like, ooh, I wonder if this part is real or if they made this part up. And I think it's more fun for me to watch it that way.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. It's kind of like watching the movie before reading the book.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I do. And if you look at my Instagram profile, my personal one, it actually has the Blue Jean Committee album cover, which is the season 1 final episode, which parodies the history of the Eagles, where
oh, I always wondered what that was. I'm like, what is this he has for? Yeah, okay, that makes. I never bothered to ask you, but.
But you're like, I don't know who those two guys are, but Ted must love it. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, they're only 7-episode seasons.
Okay, so they go pretty quick. So, and then so they're what, about quick. An hour each or something?
An hour each. You know, this first one, the Wild Wild Country, or the Batshit Valley, was two parts. So that's the first two episodes.
Okay.
So I only have 6 more episodes to go.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, so we finished. I think last everyone heard, I was about halfway through Black Panther. And then we did the second half to Black Panther. Still, I think Ant-Man still holds supreme.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say the biggest thing is it's, again, it goes back to all the magical stuff. Like, they're sitting there and, like, he flexes. So then, like, everybody explodes around him, you know, or whatever's going on. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, sure. You know, the unobtainium, you know, that gets them all of the wealth vibranium. That they have. Yeah, the vibranium, but I like to call it unobtainium. Yeah, I mean, it was okay. You know, I'm not going to, it wasn't, it was, I think the way I would describe it is, you know, typical Marvel.
Yes.
It wasn't over the top ridiculous, but it wasn't as maybe dry, I guess, as Ant-Man, which maybe I just like the drier because it's more like to real life in a sense. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it was okay. I mean, I'm not gonna fault it for, I think it runs the average of what a Marvel movie of what you would expect from Marvel.
Right.
The other thing, have you seen The Dawn Wall?
No, and I saw the trailer for it, and I actually told Ant, I was trying to get Anne to get it from the library for me, but they don't have it yet. So we're still...
It's on Netflix.
Is it on Netflix?
Yeah, that's where I watched it.
Oh, okay, I got to watch it there.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday, so it's on Netflix.
Cool, I'll watch it.
So here's the cool thing, though. So Free Solo, we talk about quite a bit.
Yes.
The Dawn Wall was released September 14th, 2018.
Uh-huh.
Free Solo was released the following week on September 28th, 2018. Like, what is that?
And he's in the movie. He's in Free Solo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was hilarious too.
But the other guy, Alex Honnold or Holland, no, Honnold or something.
Yeah.
He's not in the Dawn Wall.
Free Solo. Oh, Dawn. Oh, right.
Yeah, he's the main guy in Free Solo that does the free climb. Or, well, the Free Solo. The other guy does free climbing. It's so confusing. What essentially the quick and dirty of it is he's charting a new route, a first ascent up the Dawn Wall that no one's ever done before.
Right.
And it's he and this other guy, Kevin Jorgensen, that, you know, kind of just calls him out of the blue and says, hey, you think you might need some help climbing? And the guy's like, yeah, I'll meet you in Yosemite in a little while. And they just kind of show up and start climbing this thing for like 6 years.
Ugh.
You know? Oh, it's ridiculous. They live on the wall. They show pictures of him like pooping in a bag on the side of the platform on the side of the mountain.
See? And that's exactly what I wanted to see in Free Solo. I told you that.
Yeah.
Remember? I was like, how do they poop up there?
Well, they show you. Like, literally, you know, putting it in the bag and everything. Oh, it's nasty. But no, I think it was cool. The opening story, like, just blows your mind. Like, wait, this really happened, you know? There's a few twists. This, too, has relationship stuff going on. You know, I don't know, somehow women and climbers and their issues, like, you know, are impervious. Or, well, you know, they seep into the climbing world, you know. But
yeah.
But I would say, though, Tommy Caldwell, the guy in the Dawn Wall, he's not as in danger from his woman being around. Whereas... the Alex dude, when his woman's around, like the robot starts malfunctioning, you know, but no, it's cool though. And just all the drama, I won't tell you about other things because you're watching and you're like, what the heck?
Well, that's what I did. I did watch the trailer. Did you see the trailer for it?
Yeah, I saw the trailer.
I thought the trailer gave too much away. I think, you know,
like the finger,
the finger. I don't mind the fingers.
No, but that was a giveaway.
Yeah. But I thought it, all the, where were they? What country?
Oh, Kyrgyzstan.
Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think you needed to go into all that detail.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
and that was too much. Like save that. That's a juicy bit that would have been fine. Like, I think there was enough intrigue in the trailer about a dad taking a six-year-old son climbing.
Oh, it's incredible.
You know what I mean? That to me, that was enough, you know, that and then seeing like some of the climbing, and they fall a lot.
Oh, that's all they do is fall.
when there's ropes, you just take all these, you take like 100 more chances than the free solo guys.
They're like leaping, you know, like 10 feet and then they miss and then start over.
And then they just start banging up against that rock.
Yeah. Breaking ribs. And I know it's unbelievable.
All right. So that's a must watch. I will definitely watch that
one. Yeah. But one thing I want to say, though, and then we'll move on, is they fall so much, and the force of the falls, the thing that, I mean, I get it. The ropes are dynamic and all this stuff. But the thing that would freak me out the most is, at what point does the anchor come out of the rock? You know?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, like it hits over and over and over and over. And it's like, at some point, it's got to weaken it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But anyway.
And then they're even breaking little chunks of the rock off, you know?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, you're right. They did give too much away. I forgot about it. I saw the trailer a while back.
But I saw the trailer today and I was like, do I need to see the movie? I don't know. I guess it's going to be more of this. But some of the tension is gone.
It's going to be this guy going up and falling for like an hour and a half.
But I will say, I can't wait. Hopefully there's another season of documentaries now, because there should be a climbing documentary with Bill Hader, you know,
playing some crazy climber. Yeah, that would be amazing. Where he's like, yeah, free solo. But I don't know how they would do it, but that would be okay. I got to watch this now. Documentaries now. I'm definitely, it's on the list.
All right, they're all standalone, so I will give you like the top five.
Yeah, send it to, you know, you can Slack it to me, or we could talk about it later. But
cool.
And that's cool. Yeah, they're just doing their thing, man. Oh, that would be so good for like in the winter indoor trainer workouts. Because indoor trainer workouts are like an hour, you know.
Yeah.
All right, let's start
with a documentary.
Oh, I don't know how you say it. Let's start like. Slow, maybe? Would you say Honeyland is slow?
Yes, I was going to say, we were talking so much about documentaries. Let's start with a documentary.
So you consider this a I guess it's a documentary.
Oh, it's 100% documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you keep bees?
Yeah, I would love to keep some bees.
So I'm out the other day. Well, this is last Sunday. I'm out going down to Halama Beach. And to get to Halama Beach, you have to go over a mountain pass. It's not a big one, but it's a, you know, 2,500 feet or something like that. It's big enough, coming from more or less sea level.
Yeah.
And I get to the top of the pass, of the climb, and there's a truck with beekeepers.
Mm.
And they just pull in, and they have all the bee boxes, you know, on the back of this truck that they're going to start doing, because there's like farms in the area. So I ride down to the beach. I do my thing there, because Halama Beach is like, you know, as they call it, world famous, you know. But they get down there and there's like, you get Halama burgers, all this stuff. I just go use the bathroom and fill up my water and leave. But anyway, so I come riding back. I ride up the pass from the beach side now. As I'm riding up, I ride through a swarm of bees.
Wow.
Bees like crazy. By the thousands. Ugh. They're bouncing off of me. I didn't get stung, because I got stung about 2 weeks before that. But I didn't get stung, thankfully. But man, I mean, I'll tell you, when bees are doing their thing and hitting and running into you, mm-hmm. there is some force behind those little buggers.
Really?
It's like when you're like pelted with bees and they're just bouncing off, trying to go wherever they're just following the swarm, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you though, freak out mode. I'm just, all I thought was, and I'm swatting and I'm like, you know, and I'm just like pedaling, just trying to get out of there. And they just moved on. Like I said, they didn't sting me, you know, fortunately, but okay. Let me ask you another question.
Yes.
You would keep bees, but would you do beekeeping without gloves?
Well, I don't know. I like the smoke, and I don't know what. I would definitely start with the whole suit and all the netting and everything.
Yeah.
And then see where it goes, you know, like, I'm sure after a while you get, you know, you start getting callous, you know, I don't know. Well, I would definitely start with all the gear and then, you know, strip it away as time went on.
Why would you want to keep bees?
I think bees are important. I spend a lot of money on honey.
Oh.
Honey's expensive.
It is, especially the good honey, though. I mean...
Oh, yeah.
You get that cheap honey, it's like, yeah, okay, sure. And it's like sugary and you know how it is. But no, that good honey, though, like good clove honey or something... Man, that stuff, you're right.
With the wax inside of it or something.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. That is expensive.
And you know, you could see that this stuff is the good honey, like, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Straight from the source. It's like wild honey, right?
Where does it take place from or in? Do you know?
I do not know.
What country?
I didn't do that much research. I just thought the visuals on this were so amazing and like the dynamics of, you know, the very few words, there's very few words in this, but it's just a visually impactful trailer. It has a lot of critical acclaim, you know, the most awarded Sundance movie of the year, you know?
Right.
So it has that lofty cinematic feel to it. And then it feels like it has an important subject matter and kind of a stand-in for the whole ideas of, you know, nomadic and respect for the elements and respect for the things that you have to cull and maintain, as opposed to, you know, just like slashing and burning kind of, you know, like you could tell that there is a, without giving too much away, like the, you know, what's it called? The Dawn Wall.
Right.
Trailer. This one left a lot up to the imagination, but it intrigued me at every turn. And she was teaching her, you know, the children how to do it. And she's like, only half. You only ever take half. And then, you know, you hear that the balance is being thrown off by other beekeepers or other people. And, you know, it's like it's this one little old lady's job to defend the colonies of, you know, the fleeting colonies of bees.
Yeah, man, you touched on it. Ton of stuff I wanted to talk about too. Just the first thing, which doesn't really take long, is the little dialogue, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I like that too. I mean, it was more of a visual, and you got so much out of the visual as far as exactly what you're saying. I mean, as far, mm-hmm. you know, like teaching the young generation, probably the grandkids more or less.
Yeah.
She's the keeper of the ecosystem in a way, and mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of stuff, right? The other cool thing, well, and then let me back up really quick. So wins all these Sundance awards, but is Sundance or the Cannes Film Festival, which one's like the premier film festival for these art house kind of movies?
I think there's a few of them. I mean, there's I think TIFF is really taking off, the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah.
That's kind of the one that it feels like it kicks off the season. Then Sundance is still really big, you know? So I think between those two, I'm sure there's 100 others, but it always feels like that. And then there's the Berlin Film Festival, which is the Golden Bear, which has a lot of European success.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm sure there's tons more, and people are yelling at me probably right now, but.
Well, I'm not, so. And then you ever see Yaba?
No, what's that?
An African, like, foreign film. Y-A-A-B-A.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. No.
So Yaba it reminds me a little bit of Yaba.
Mm.
More or less, I mean, just the quick and dirty of it is, it's not really a woman who's teaching, like, grandkids about beekeeping, but she's like the matron or the matriarch of the family, and all these young people want to like cast her out for being like a witch or something, and really she's just taking care of like the earth sort of stuff, you know, and taking care of the things that she knows the family needs to do in the old tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The old, like, I don't know, like, what would you call it? Like, not like if you're in the bush, you know, like whatever her old tradition would have been. And she's doing it that way, and they see that as like witchcraft or something. And and you know, but her grandson is like siding with her. Now, you know, I'm not saying it's back and forth, you know, there's like family conflict, mm-hmm. but he understands like this is just the ways of the old woman, and the ways of the old woman are good for the earth and good for, you know, family, and, you know, and the new people are like just burning like the villages and just, you know.
Wow.
And it kind of reminds me a little bit of that, you know, foreign film, you know, just simple, back to nature, like get rid of like all the tech that, you know, the Western world has.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. So it was, you know, I saw some parallels in there, and that was the first thing I thought of was that movie.
That's so funny because I just looked it up and it premiered at TIFF. So it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in 89.
Oh, okay.
And it won Cannes. So.
Oh, wow. Yabba.
Yeah, Yabba.
There you go, man. See? All right. So any final thoughts on Honeyland?
Yeah, I mean, it's just another great... I think Neon has really established himself as a premier documentary film house. Like they have a nice record now between some of the BBC films. Like
the funny thing I noticed. Well, I don't know if it's funny, but maybe in an ironic way or something. But just comparing Honeyland to Yabba, though. So I rewatched like the trailer for Yabba, and I'll have to say the cinematography is like not that great.
Right.
You know, I mean, well, you're also talking what, 30 years ago? Yeah. It's 30 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. You watch Honeyland and like they have drone footage of, you know, 4K drone footage and, you know, all this stuff going on, you know, and it's like, yeah, I mean, you really can't compare the cinematography.
Yeah.
You know, they're so different in just, you know, the technical aspects. But the story, the everything that's laid out in kind of how they follow, like, you know, like you said, I mean, bees are important. Bees are in trouble. And with, you know, the way bees are disappearing and stuff, like we need to take care of them. And then people just want to come in, cut the hives out of the trees, send them down the river, burn it all after you're done, you know, and yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So Neon has had like an amazing few years. Three Identical Strangers was one of their first documentaries. Then they had Apollo 11, which we saw, you know, which was amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And The Biggest Little Farm, which we talked about, which also, like you said, to see 4K footage and like of these things was so phenomenal.
I want to watch The Biggest Little Farm for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I definitely want to. All right, so did you know Hulu was having live sports?
Well, they wanted to make sure that somebody was talking about it, right?
Yeah.
I love this promo commercial, whatever it is, for Hulu. So Hulu got the Women's World Cup soccer team to do this commercial where they do a new dance, a new goal celebration, where it's called Watching Live Sports on Hulu or something, right?
Yeah.
And I love this for many reasons. It's like, for the first part, because when they talk about, like, there's a current controversy with the women's soccer team where they sued because they are underpaid and overperforming compared to all the men's team, you know, to the other men's team. I think they finished first. They've been killing it over the past many years, and they still are paid less than a lot of the men, and they pull in more ad dollars. They'd pull in more revenue. So this kind of made fun of all of that and kind of showed that, you know, even though there is some seriousness behind it, you know, it shows that they still have enough in them to make fun of themselves. And hopefully Hulu did pay them buckets of money for this.
One question I have for you, though, like, I mean, if you're going to try and like reel in the live sport audience, do you think soccer is the one to go to with an American audience? I mean, wouldn't it be maybe like you're going to do live sports? I mean, like, what are the live sports they have? I mean, I don't know if it's baseball, if it's the big four, you know, I could see maybe like live sports being big, right? But if you're going to do live sports and it's like crew, nothing against like bicycle racing. I love bicycle racing. It's just not a big audience draw to make it to where Hulu is going to be relevant or something for live sports.
Well, I think right now, I think it's a timing strategy where you're going to get to ride the wave of the women in the World Cup right now and killing it, you know? So,
oh, I follow you. Yeah.
So it's like, at this time, they'll do it. And I don't know what big sports they have locked down. So
yeah,
that's interesting. You know, a lot of the other sports are, you know, a lot of the sports are shared, and the streaming space is very fractured when it comes to sports. So,
yeah. And I mean, the big thing about sports, like, let's just say you go to a Dodger game, you know, being in LA and all this stuff, go to a Dodger game. Although as of late past few years, Dodgers, I mean, they've been packing the house because they've been a pretty good ball club. But when, you know, you look at a team that's not a good ball club, I mean, you know, take your pick. There's probably a dozen of them. Mm-hmm. You know, stadium's empty. There's 2,500 people in the seats of, you know, a 50,000 seat ballpark.
Yeah.
I mean, TV revenue is where they're getting their money from, right? Mm-hmm. TV revenue, ads, you know, on television, you know, all that stuff. When you're looking at a streaming space, I don't know. I mean, when you look at, and then you consider like TV contracts and everything, how does Hulu or any streaming service really compete in that market? Because you're sitting there looking at ads and the, and like what they're paying the teams, because the teams, obviously, if the ballpark's empty, the teams are still paying these guys.
Yeah.
It still like costs a ton of money to run a ballpark that full or empty, you know, so, and the money's coming from television, right?
Yes.
So with something like that, I mean, baseball might not be the right sport to compare it to, but I mean, if you think about it, how are you locking down contracts for live streaming? I mean, unless it's something like bicycle racing and crew and beach volleyball. And I mean, if you're doing that kind of, you know, and I'm not making a joke of it. I mean, like people want to watch that stuff. I know, like.
There's audiences for all of it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, people have their sport that they're into. Not everybody's into like, you know, the NBA or whatever, you know, but what, like, where do the contracts come in and who's, and how are they paying and where's the revenue model and everything in sports like that?
Yeah. Every sport seems to have their own revenue model, their own kind of favorite, you know, favorite stakeholder. We always joke that football's favorite stakeholder is the owners of the teams, because they all have, you know, they all kind of share among the owners, but the players are kind of, you know, they're paid multi-million dollar contracts, but they don't have as much.
Yeah, but in comparison.
But they don't have the control that the NBA Players Association has. Like, right. To me, that the NBA is a players association, players sport. They
take part ownership in the team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's player driven. And then, you know, soccer, it feels like it's, you know, it's all over the place, but it really feels like the, not even so much the owners as the sponsors. It's in soccer across all levels, because they're so prominent on the jerseys and, you know, they have like, it's almost like the sponsors are part owners of the company.
That's how bicycle racing is too.
Part owners of the teams. Yeah. So,
or NASCAR even.
Yeah. So a lot of the minor sports, they are ruled by the patrons, I guess you would say, the people paying for these sports to happen because it's in their field, you know?
Yeah. But are you into soccer?
No, sadly not.
Yeah. You know, the thing about soccer, you know, like I've probably watched, like I tried watching like World Cup soccer a few times, and we were in the Netherlands and we're in a bar, you know, in Amsterdam, and like soccer's on TV and we're like, I'm watching soccer and everything. And the one thing about soccer, like, you know, I grew up playing hockey, so I kind of get the idea of, you know, like there's, you're trying to keep it away from the other team and you want to score a goal, and you know, I get all that stuff, right?
And you got to pass it around a little bit before.
Yeah, no, totally, I get all that. I don't understand the clock though. Like, the clock does its thing, the guy falls down, the clock never stops, they squirt Windex on him, he gets up, he's back in the game, runs around, all but the referee is like,
he has the real time,
he's keeping like his own time, but nobody kind of knows what the time is, and then at some point he just ends the game or whatever, but the, like you get to the end of the game and then they keep adding on time. I don't understand
bonus
the time
or something. yeah No, if you're a certain kind of person, yes, this happens to me. So I will say, although I'm not into soccer, I do like LAFC, the Los Angeles Football Club.
Okay.
Because I think the way that they put on the show that is the soccer game, you know, the football game at the LAFC stadium is like an event. And it is more like eventized, and it is very fan friendly, audience friendly. It's geared towards the casual soccer fan. You know, you don't have to know too much to what's going on.
Right.
And, you know, and we've gone to a couple games, and they're really like, it's the most energized I've seen. You know, we've been to a couple Rams games, we've been to a couple LAFC games, and I've been to a Galaxy game. And I think LAFC, of all three of those, and we've been to Dodgers games, but baseball is completely different when you're talking about a fan experience.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
But to me, LAFC puts on the best show. You know, they have their super fans in one section, and Bryce wants to be in that section, but I'm like, we're not that big of a LAFC fan to be over there. Like, we don't know all the chants and the cheers.
Dad, get me the shirt. Just get me the shirt, man. That's all I need.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right, man. So overall, though, I mean, Hulu with live sports, I mean, essentially what they're trying to do is get people to subscribe to Hulu to get, like, well, just live sports.
Yes. And I think, so to me, you know, obviously not speaking for any of the companies I work for, but I think it's fun to see this from Hulu as kind of like a differentiator from ESPN Plus, because there's been a lot of talk about, you know, bundling of all the Disney owned brands. And now that Hulu's like fully owned by Disney, or on its path to being fully owned by Disney, and everybody knows that ESPN Plus is also fully owned by Disney. I mean, ESPN Plus is basically fully integrated. It is Disney property. So, you know, there's a little bit of confusion among among consumers as to what is going to fall in what bucket. So I think it's important to tell the consumers that, oh yes, while we know that you know that ESPN Plus is the place to go for UFC or something like that, or, you know, one of the many other sports that ESPN covers. So that's the nice thing to say. Hulu's, you know, kind of staking their own claim to certain sports. And I think that might also be why you don't, you know, I think there's so much hustle in getting contracts with associations. You know, the deal for ESPN to get college football and the college football playoff was immense. It's huge. It's a huge deal. And it's amazing, you know, windfall for everyone involved. So it's kind of an interesting play as a differentiator. But I think it also, while it stakes some claim to the sports space, it might add to some of the confusion.
Yeah, you know, the one thing though I do want to see on Hulu Live, you know, live sports, is Dodgeball.
Dodgeball the movie?
No, like, as it, you know, like ESPN Ocho, right? Where they had Dodgeball. Ocho. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. All right, man. Red Rum. Dr. Sleep. So what do you think was with the title? I kind of don't get the title. Why sleep if it's shining?
I don't know. I think it was the book. The book was the sequel to The Shining.
Oh, so this is canon.
This is canon. This is like a sequel that Stephen King wrote.
Oh, I didn't know that, because they said it was, you know, bestseller and stuff. And yeah, or whatever for the, you know, The Shining. And I knew that about The Shining. I didn't know he did a sequel.
Yeah. And I didn't know. I knew that he did a sequel to it, but I was not a uber fan of Stephen King. And, you know, to hear somebody doing a sequel to one of the great great early movies or great early horrors. So I don't know. I saw the title and I remember seeing the book cover when it came out, but I think I was turned off that the idea that, you know, Stephen King was like cashing in on an old property, you know, and doing like a sequel. But now that I know some more of the subject.
So he's phoning it in is what you're saying.
No, I don't know whether it is, you know, huge fans of, I mean, I don't read Stephen King. So
yeah, me neither.
You know, it was kind of like, I wasn't into the demo anyway. So I was kind of sour grapes about it, you know? But now to see Ewan McGregor in this, and to see the actors that I like, and to see more of the plot, I think it's interesting to me in a way that, you know, The Shining's kind of a straightforward story, and this feels like I really want to see how they play it out in the space where it's this sequel that's going to have callbacks and memories of him as a child, you know?
Did you like The Shining when it was out, or when you saw it?
It was too scary for me. Yeah.
So as a kid, you mean?
As a kid, yes. And yeah. Then I don't know that I've never sat through the whole thing, I don't think so.
Oh, wow. I've seen it a few times. It's probably, again, we've talked about this in the past where we're not really into horror.
We're not horror fans. Yeah.
However, I would say this is The Shining, that is probably my premier horror film.
Okay. I own it. I don't know why. I should sit through the whole thing.
That's hilarious.
I always go to put it on, and then it's in my Stanley Kubrick collection.
Yeah.
And then I put on Barry Lyndon or something, you know?
Stanley Kubrick?
Yeah. The Shining was directed by Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, that's right. It was. You're right about that. I was, for some reason, my head was stuck with Stephen King.
Yeah.
Yeah. But No, I mean, the thing that I like about it, though, is, well, first of all, I love Jack. Mm-hmm. And I just love, well, and then when you think about Stanley Kubrick, he's fantastic at writing or at directing movies, not writing, but more or less directing movies
yeah.
about our institutions that destroy ourselves, right? That destroy us.
Yes. Full Metal Jacket. Yeah.
Yeah. You create the soldier kills you or whatever, right? You you create the machine or the computer kills you, like 2001. You know, all these movies, right? So that's the cool thing about Stanley Kubrick. But the one thing, though, I got to say, though, about The Shining is when I watched The Shining, you know, years ago and, well, I should say years ago. I mean, I was probably in high school when I saw it, which, like, freaked me out. But it was such a great movie.
Yeah.
The one thing about it, though, is Ewan McGregor now goes back and he's like the son, you know, Red Rum and the whole nine. You have like a multi-million dollar property. Oh, and by the way, I've been to the place where they filmed it.
Oh, the Overlook, whatever, hotel?
Yeah, which is up on just outside of Portland. What is that? I don't even care. But it'll come to me.
Portland, Maine, right?
No. Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Mount Hood. Yeah, Mount Hood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's about Mount Hood where they filmed it and stuff. Anyway, so you look at a multi-million dollar property, and this is how Stephen King writes it, but this is the only flaw I see in the whole thing. Multi-million dollar property. Murders take place. Mm-hmm. Jack goes haywire. He freezes out in the maze.
Right.
Dead of winter. They find him frozen. You know, the mom and the kids survive, and then the kid, played by Ewan McGregor, shows up, and the door is still hacked, and it's all back. It's exactly like nothing has changed.
Right.
Are you telling me that location, everything, like if it was real life, they would just leave a property like that to just rot away?
They just walk away from it?
I doubt it. I doubt it. Too much money, man. Too much money.
Well, it felt like with all the flashbacks and everything, it felt like there's a supernatural, there's going to be his subconscious. You know, it's a very spiritual horror kind of movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, in The Shining, it was more like ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, like people were murdered however many years prior, and the ghosts are still haunting the place, and the kid could see them.
Right.
Like you said, it was very linear, right? It was very straightforward. I mean, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
This is more like a demonic sort of a thing, you know? Yeah. Like it's more like, I don't know, devilish or something, you know? Or like with the breathing in the smoke or the steam or whatever and such.
But I do like the fact, so...
Or sucking your soul, maybe.
Yeah, but however it happens, I think the payoff of having Ewan McGregor look through that iconic break in the door...
Ah, dude.
Is worth whatever it takes.
Ah, dude.
Because just it, you know, the image by itself is so powerful that, of course, you know, I watch these trailers and it's the thumbnail for the first trailer I come across for this.
For sure.
And I was like, okay, that's because it's iconic. It's, you know, this is how they're going to get you to watch this movie, to watch this trailer. But then you watch it through the official trailer and it's the thumbnail in the official trailer too. So everybody's in lockstep with how you're going to sell this movie. You're going to sell this movie on the fans of The Shining. You're going to overserve the fans of the original movie. And, you know, logic be damned, you're going to show the boy on the tricycle in the hallway. You know what I mean? It's like all of these iconic, the blood scene in the hallway.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, it's just even without being a super fan of the original movie, I understand. I think what it does is you take something that has become memes in the zeitgeist, and then it says, we're going to show you where it comes from, even if you don't want to pull out the old Cooper collection and put on The Shining. We'll give you a new movie to watch, and we're going to put memes in there, but that memes are actually going to have the subtext of the original thought behind what the scenes meant.
So with that said... Like, this is, you know, supposedly the teaser trailer we're talking about. I don't understand the demarcation line between a teaser trailer and a regular trailer at this. I mean, 2 minutes, 40 seconds or yes. 41 seconds It has exposition.
Yes.
Telling the story. There's character development, lots of dialogue. I mean, what are they teasing?
Yes.
In other words, the definition of a trailer is to tease the movie.
Yeah.
And a teaser trailer teases the trailers to come.
Maybe.
I don't see how this is a teaser trailer. I mean, you're either going to, after seeing this, you're either going to go watch it or you're not going to go watch it. You're either a fan of Stephen King, Kubrick, and The Shining, and you want to see the follow-up,
right?
Or you're not. I mean, it's like Star Wars at some point, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand the naming conventions either. You know, I think it seems like it's, you know, it's an executive making a slate, a marketing slate, and they say, all right, we're going to have a teaser trailer, and then we're going to have trailer one, and then trailer two. And they're like, oh.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, so we do a teaser. So somebody goes out and they develop a teaser trailer, and they're like, well, you know, we really need to sell this with a little more story, you know?
Yeah, and this is where we need a trailer editor on our show to say, like, well, the reason for that is... Well, yeah. We'll talk to Joe next week about it.
There you go. Exactly.
And then Dr. Sleep. Do you know what's with the name of the movie? Or
I do not know the reason.
Yeah, there's probably some Stephen King fan out there like just thumping his dashboard right now, just saying, Dr. Sleep.
Dr. Sleep is such a critical part of the story. How can they not know?
Yeah, it's the whole without him, you know, like they just know it, right? Yeah. And here we are, just a couple of knuckleheads like, what does Dr. Sleep mean? It's kind of like, who's Luke Skywalker again? Yeah, you know. Yeah. I don't know. Are you going to see this?
I think you and McGregor to me heightens the chance that I'm going to see it. You know, I don't think we're going to see it in the theater, but.
Oh, I for sure won't.
But I think I will check this out when it's around streaming.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I like about this is, you know, you're talking about like super fans of The Shining. I don't know if super fans of The Shining exist. Maybe they do.
Oh, they do. I enjoy watching many of the Easter egg videos on YouTube about The Shining.
Oh, really?
I have more fun watching like theories about what The Shining means than watching the actual movie The Shining.
Oh, I'll have to check some of those out.
Oh, I'll send you some of my favorites.
Yeah, that sounds cool because I've never gotten into it that way. I mean, I've always enjoyed I've probably seen the movie about three times, I'm guessing, maybe four. And I really enjoy the movie. I mean, I think like I said, it's probably at my pinnacle of horror.
Yeah.
Because it goes back to what we've said again in the past too. Like the horror that I like isn't the slasher movie where they have like a body count.
Uh-huh.
But it's one of those like they just get in your mind and they make you think and they just like,
right.
You just get free. You know, it's like weird.
And that's what these videos say. These videos say that there's a lot of subconscious plot points that are laid into you that you don't realize. But then when it happens, you're like, it's all been foreshadowed.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so like everything that Jack does through it is like, oh, well, when he does this, when he's walking down the big hall and he's being shown the whole place that he's actually, you know, somebody's already dead or, you know. I'll pull up a couple of my favorites and I'll send them to your way.
Okay. I didn't know. You know what's hilarious though? Like you haven't seen the movie, but you're like a super fan.
No, I'm a super like YouTube fan. Like this is before I turned off that autoplay.
I was say you went down the YouTube rabbit hole where it's like whatever, a bunch of like 7 minute YouTube videos. And before you know it, you're just like, whoa, it's 3 p.m. How did I get here? No wonder I gotta pee. You know? Yeah. That's the problem with YouTube. Like and then the thing I hate about it too is like you're about 20 minutes, not even that long. You're about like 3 minutes into like whatever video and you're looking at like the next ones to come in the lineup.
Yeah.
And you don't even you just click off because you're like, I'm done with this. Let's go to the next one.
Well, I think that's what makes these videos so, because the opportunity cost of hopping out of it is so constant, they really like pack it in. You know, when you're watching a 20 minute video on YouTube and it's got you 18 minutes in, that's amazing. That's an amazing like piece of work that they put together.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, there's some things that I watch on YouTube and stuff, like, and I'll watch it strictly because, like, I don't care about all the other stuff. I'm not, like, I'm not browsing YouTube looking for something. I'm there for that particular video.
Yeah.
Which I think is different than, you know, like, well, what's next? I'm bored. It's like channel surfing, you know, 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
I'm bored. What's the next video? Okay, sure. I'll just click around on, like, you know, nonsense.
I think it's funny because my preview has, like, this eclectic mix. It has, like, half, it has, like, a third half trailers and then a little bit of those videos that we're talking about, like the Easter egg movie videos. It's like a, you know, 10% of that. And then it has like 40% of like how to fix your car or how to fix your ice maker. Like it has all these like the 5-minute videos that I'm trying to fix my ice maker.
You know, top 10 kills of Sharknado. No, you know, it's so funny, though, that you say it like that, you know, where it's like you're sitting there and you're watching, oh, I don't know, like, because I'll watch like whatever bicycle training things, you know, because I've watched it because I'm, well, training on my bike, you know, and
there you go. Yeah.
And like, but you know, you'll watch something like, you know, one of these Shining type, you know, like Dr. Sleep or something. And then all of a sudden, you know, Lance Armstrong on doping. You know, and you're like, where does it, how does it even connect, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't connect. They just know what you watch and they're hoping you're going to click on it.
They're like, this is what you've seen in the past, whatever. So
yeah, it's like they built your like portfolio or whatever, you know, and they're just building it for you, hoping you're clicking on stuff because they don't care if it's relevant. They just don't want your eyeball to leave.
Right.
So
time in the machine.
That's it, man. All right, so we covered quite a bit of, you know, we talked, we had nothing to talk about, and a lot of time went by talking about a lot of stuff. You know, we hit a bunch of things. Yeah, another good week, and then we'll have an interview again next week with Joe Hubbard. He's a trailer editor who's done, man, his portfolio is, like, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, his website, and, yeah, looking forward to talking with him, and, you know, that'll be truly exciting. Yeah, that's all I got for tonight, Ted. How about you?
Cool. Yeah, me too. Oh, and I will say, so I was dogging Riverdale a little bit, but it had two cool episodes. One, it had, like, a Breakfast Club episode.
Okay.
Which it kind of played out as like a Breakfast Club. It had like the 80s stuff going on in it.
Oh, yeah.
It actually had Anthony Michael Hall as the principal instead of the nerdy student. So I thought that was funny.
Oh, that's that. Yeah, that is good.
And then it did. Yeah, then the Dungeons and Dragons stuff. But so it's funny.
But yeah, pass along the documentary. You know, documentaries, your favorite five that you were saying.
Yeah, my top five documentary nows.
Yeah, we'll check it out. So, all right, man. Hey, you have a good week and look forward to talking to you next week.
Awesome. Talk to you then.
All right, Ted, later.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.